I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on March 19, 2024. We'll get started right away with our first bill of the agenda, House File 4989, Representative Purcell. If you can move your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'm here with two other co-equal hosts, as we like to have in our three branches of government in a democracy. The three of us will be presenting the bill. So I will let each of these representatives introduce themselves when the time comes. But my name is first on the bill. So House File 4989, the Clean Water Climate Smart Bill. This is a bill that has been in the works amongst the three of us, amongst a lot of conversations had with other individuals in this room, a lot of folks who aren't in this room, for over a year. It has taken a lot of different forms in our conversations and trying to make it the best we can. We know that there is no perfect, there's no silver bullet, there's no perfect answer to specifically looking at what's happening in the southeast Minnesota. A lot of our ag folks who have their own private wells cannot drink from their wells. And so making sure that we are part of a solution and trying to work together to make sure to address what the Environmental Protection Agency has tasked the state to do. And we hope that some of those answers can be found by what we have in our bill 4989. So it's about clean water, it's about soil health, climate smart farming, and I think kind of the three of us come from a little bit different places to this bill. I ran a clean water nonprofit in southeastern Minnesota and have been a water and environmental educator for a long time, as well as farmed for 10 years. So I'll let my co-presenters introduce themselves and what brought them to this bill.
All right, Representative Olson.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Bjorn Olson. You know, this conversation started when Representative Kraft and I were passing in the hallway, and I said, Representative Kraft, why don't you, instead of trying to get the metropolitan area into a net neutral scenario, which is going to be very difficult, I said, we can go net negative in rural Minnesota. I said, the way we farm, the way we can farm, is a wonderful opportunity. And I see that as a way in which a lot of us are going. So a little background about myself. I farm. I've farmed for 10 years. I'm only 33, even though I look a lot older than that, I suppose. But what I want to make sure that everyone realizes, because I've gotten a lot of individuals asking me, why are you talking about this today? You know, there are a lot of questions that people have addressed to me. And, yeah, I'll agree. There are issues in this bill. You know, when you introduce it on a Monday and then it gets a hearing on a Tuesday, there's not a lot of opportunity to have it looked at. We understand that we've had conversations for a full year with a lot of outside organizations, a lot of groups. And I'll tell you, you know, the issues like so where the funding's coming from, that's an issue. We're not happy with it. Talk about the goals at this current juncture with the amount of funding that's available. The goals are unrealistic. There's a lot of issues with this bill, but I told everyone, I'll sit here and I will advocate for how great agriculture is and how great our farmers are and how sustainable they are moving and how wonderful we can do this and what a great steward we can be of the land. I'll stand there every single day and take that shot just to remind people that what we do as farmers is good for the land. We can do even better. All right, you heard what's going on in southeastern Minnesota. We can encourage our farmers to take a step out. Really quick story about me and my minimal tillage and no-till experience. That's what we do on my farm. I got froze out early one November, and as a result, my dad told me, you know, my dad, the old-school farmer, says it's going to be a disaster. It's going to be a disaster because I had to, you know, I previously would rip up that ground and make it nice and black and let the wind blow it away, and I did great stuff that way. I'm being a little sarcastic, but you know, my dad said it's going to be a disaster, and I said, well, I guess we're going to have to roll the dice. And in the spring of the year, I didn't rip it up. I drilled it in, and I saw just as much profit as I had the year before, and I saved myself, you know, 35 hours worth of time in a tractor, and I saved myself $500 worth of diesel fuel. So there is really great ways that we can encourage our farmers to be more sustainable, even more than what they already are doing. Because remember, photosynthesis is this great thing where we take carbon out of the atmosphere and then turn it into energy. We turn it into crops. So that's why I'm here today. I'm here to talk about how great farming is. Anyone who puts me in front of a microphone and gives me that opportunity, I will tell them that. So I know there's opposition, there's questions, there's concerns. This bill is in no way, shape, or form ready to go. But I think that everyone here can agree that the concept is sound. It's a good concept. The way that we go about it is what needs to be discussed. And I hope to continue that conversation into the future.
All right, Representative Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm just really excited to be here. I'm Larry Kraft. I represent most of the community of St. Louis Park. So I come to this from a different lens. I mean, I got involved with politics to do something about climate change. And as I was learning about various aspects of it, I started learning about that there are things that that if farmers do certain ways can have really beneficial impacts on the amount of carbon sequestered out of the atmosphere into the soil. And then as I talked to some of my colleagues here, learned that not only is that a thing, but actually when you do these practices, it can improve water quality and soil health and the nutritional value of the food that's grown there. And so my question early on in discussions with Representative Purcell on this was, well, why can't we incent and do more of this? It seems like there's a lot of societal value. And that's where the discussion started. And I've been, you know, really, in, you know, Representative Olson and I probably disagree on many things. But like this concept of that farmers can be a key part of the solution, I believe very strongly, and the more I dig into this, the more I believe that. And so I'm really excited to be part of this threesome in bringing this to the committee, and that I think that there's just some great opportunities here. So thank you.
So I'll go over a little bit about what the bill does. So the bill has incentives for regenerative agricultural practices as well as conservation ag like cover crops, no-till, and this is really focusing for the first time as a pilot project in the southeast karst region of the state. The idea is give it a shot, figure out where the challenges lie before then rolling it out statewide. Also, this really also has an element in with the precision fertilizer use. We've talked a lot about nitrogen in this committee. We've talked a lot about fertilizer. And so this is wanting to continue to have that conversation. And in the conversation that we've had around some other bills looking at nitrate in the water, to have this as another tool in the toolbox and have another opportunity to be tackling this issue.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here to talk about what the bill doesn't do. So some of the big issues and sticking points for me, obviously, mandates on farmers. Mandates never work well on farmers. I said this has to be an incentive-based opportunity. There's a lot of private entities that are incentivizing sustainable agriculture. We want to be a part of that. I think that the more we can drive individuals into this concept that farmers are the solution, I think that's where we want to be. So we're not looking at mandates. We're also not looking at the funding source as an issue, but you know, I told them, I said, no new taxes, right? So
read my lips,
no new taxes. So we had a hard time trying to locate and identify, and we'd love input from everyone who has their eye on the budget as well on how we can help this program, which is already being seen as very successful in other entities around. You know, Cargill has a program, Valero has a program. There are a lot of programs that are going on. And how could we extend this beyond the reach of a Valero or a CHS or a Cargill?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, we've talked to a lot of folks, and one of the questions is, well, do these practices work, right? And, you know, with discussions with many folks and the current science is, yes, they do. They may need to be combined in a certain way, but they work to sequester carbon. They work to improve soil health and water quality. And I think one of the things that's unique about the proposal we're bringing forth is that it also takes into account feedback that it's important that when you're thinking about this, that it's not something that's done for 1, 2, or 3 years, that there's permanence built in. So that's built into the concept of the program. And the fact of building in the precision fertilizer management as a possible practice, you know, that one study looked at and said that can be some of the biggest benefits is to have less nitrogen oxide emissions that are a very potent greenhouse gas. So just excited to talk about this. And I think at this time we have some testifiers.
All right. So before we move to testifiers, I would like to announce the motion for this bill is to refer it to the Environment Committee, but I want to assure members that the bill will come back as it is within my the committee's jurisdiction. I know that, you know, we've had a couple proposals already that has talked a lot about the nitrates within southeast Minnesota, and this is also one of those proposals. So I want to thank Representative Purcell, Representative Olson, and Representative Kraft for your contributions and your input and as we talk about this issue. And so our first testifier for the bill is Dr. Beth Fisher, Assistant Professor of Geology and Soil Science. If you can introduce for the record and proceed.
Hi, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Beth Fisher. I teach and research in geology and soil science at Minnesota State University, Mankato. I'm here today in support of this bill because what I'm learning in my work from farmers and in the scientific research is that when we take combinations of soil health practices and use them together, they have the most positive benefit for what is stored as soil carbon, what produces soil fertility, and for water quality. One of the things that I know as a soil scientist that we don't often think about in the whole story of CO2 is that the carbon dioxide in the soil is much, much, much higher than the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. So when we break that up, we're actually releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. In addition to that release of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, we're also exposing soil organic matter, the source of fertility in the soil, to more degradation than it would have if it was not exposed. So we're learning in my field that the tillage is producing erosion. We know that erosion affects water quality. It also strips nutrients and fertility off of the soil. Studies in Minnesota are showing that the rates of erosion from tillage are way higher than they were prior to the times when we were tilling. We also are seeing that cover crops, when used alone, have variable benefits on the soil. We're seeing that reduced tillage alone also has minimum benefits. And so, again, the reason I'm here today is when we combine these practices and work together, we actually see a much greater benefit for what is the soil carbon storage, the soil fertility, and also for water quality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Beth. Our next testifier is Dr. Carrie Jennings from Freshwater. Welcome back to the committee. If you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang, members. My name is Carrie Jennings. I'm Research and Policy Director at Freshwater, and I was here at the end of February with your second nitrate testimony. And Dr. Beth Fisher and I are part of a team of researchers that are looking at regenerative agricultural practices. We began our research with money from General Mills, and we have a $5 million USDA Climate Smart Commodities Grant. We're one of 27 groups in the state that are researching climate smart farming practices. And although Beth emphasized carbon, I want to just say again that this seems to be a win-win-win solution. These regenerative farming practices not only sequester carbon in the soil, but they increase infiltration of water into the soil by allowing the soil to grow structure. And that infiltration is what keeps the nutrients in the soil along with the water, so you have less dissolved loss of nitrogen and phosphorus. So I want to thank you for taking this up, and thank you for Representative Purcell and the other two members who have created this innovative bill. We love the language in this bill and would love to see it carried forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Carey. Our next testifier is Ariel Kagan from Climate and Workplace Farmers Union. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ariel Kagan, and I lead the Climate and Working Lands Program at the Minnesota Farmers Union. And I'm glad to share some quick thoughts on Representative Purcell's bill, HF 4989. First, I want to say that we appreciate the committee's work at the intersection of soil health, climate change, and water quality. Our members have elevated climate resilience as a key priority, and we agree that ag can be a part of the climate solution. Last year, I had the opportunity to lead a series of listening sessions across the state to hear from farmers and rural communities about their thoughts on how to address climate change and make farms more resilient. Unsurprisingly, market-driven and incentive-based programs were high on the list of activities. That approach is important to farmers, and for good reason. Farms are businesses that respond to markets, and conservation practices can improve long-term return on investment. That said, the immediate cost of implementation is high, and we're supportive of MDA exploring these markets and would certainly encourage further discussion on the idea presented in the bill of a state carbon credit program. We also convened the Minnesota Working Group for Climate Smart Commodities in partnership with Minnesota Milk and the Nature Conservancy. The multi-sector working group aims to coordinate efforts to invest in conservation agriculture practices with climate benefits, like the one in this bill. For example, of the 141 projects funded through the USDA's Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities, 30 will be operating in Minnesota. One insight from these conversations is that farmers and those advising them are reasonably overwhelmed by the volume of programs and the different standards in each. So we'd want to make sure that this proposal is well aligned with other work in the area. Many of these programs include a wide range of conservation practices, and USDA has identified a list of over 50 practices that are considered climate smart. This set of practices reflects that not every practice works well on every field and allows farmers to choose from a suite of practices that meet their resource concerns and their operational goals. One way to improve adoption could be through helping farmers navigate the many programs available in their area. Each program has different terms, contract lengths, and approaches, meaning farmers need a lot of information to make informed choices. We've appreciated conversations with Representative Purcell on this bill and look forward to continued discussion on these and other aspects of the proposal. And as we've said before in this committee, I'd like to thank you for your work on soil health equipment grants, Forever Green funding, and the MDA's Ag Water Quality Certification Program and other initiatives that are important to advancing this work. Thank you to Representative Purcell, Olson, and Kraft, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Ariel. Our next testifier is Lauren Dower from the Minnesota Farm Bureau.
Chair Vang, members of the committee, my name is Lauren Dower. I'm the public policy specialist for the Minnesota Farm Bureau and Federation, and have the privilege of representing 30,000 farmers and rancher members across the state. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 3989 and provide some comments and concerns with the legislation. First off, just wanted to thank the author and co-authors for continuing conversations on this topic and finding solutions that involve and incentivize farmers and their collaborative work with improving soil health and clean water in our state. In this legislation, we're concerned with the transfer of the fertilizer fee that would normally go to the Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Educational Council and would go to this legislation's new pilot program. Since its creation, AFRAC has played a critical role in supporting the needs of farmers through its research, education, and outreach initiatives that improve fertilizer use and efficiency. The council and its exceptional work is a direct reflection of farmers working together to find solutions to the problems we face. One other small thing on a different note, collecting data is important for research and to track progression of any program. In Section 1, the collection of farmers' names, locations, and contact information would be made public, and we believe it is their right to keep this information private, and we believe it could also possibly hinder participation in this program. But we know this is a work in progress, and we're very appreciative of the author, and we're willing to have continued conversations on this, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Lauren. Our final testifier is Amanda Bilbleck from the Corn Growers.
Good afternoon, Chair Vang and members of the committee. My name is Amanda Bilbleck. I'm the Senior Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. MCGA represents about 7,000 family farmers who grow corn. To start with, the Minnesota Corn Growers Association shares the intent of increasing adoption of clean water, soil health, and climate smart practices. And we look forward to being a part of discussions with Representative Purcell, Kraft, and Olson as this bill moves forward. I just want to make a few comments on the bill that we hope to discuss a little bit further throughout the process. It has been mentioned before, but starting with Section 3, there are some goals that are outlined for implementation of clean water, climate smart, and soil health practice implementation. We would question if the feasibility to help meet some of these goals without some of the corresponding funding or technical assistance to reach them, which I think has been discussed a little bit before. So for example, for the committee's information, so a piece of strip till equipment can range in cost from about $180,000 to $250,000. And then like a custom rate for having hiring someone to do a strip till application is about $25 an acre based upon some custom rates from the University of Iowa. We would also have questions about what might happen if those goals are not met. Is there a future liability concern that a farmer would have? And the previous testifier, my colleague from the Farm Bureau, talked a little bit about the data practices. We really appreciate having some of the data classified as non-public. That is really important. But as was previously mentioned, that if that could be declassified or made public if a farmer does receive assistance, and that just might deter some participation, but I think is a area of further discussion that we would like to have. Really appreciate and want to talk further about the pilot program that's proposed in Section 4. Really something that is proposing to sort of look at a way that could address some resource concerns in a specific targeted geographic area. That is a very helpful concept to kind of be looking at. The question we'd have around some of that is if there was, because last year the legislature provided some additional funding to Bowser specifically for some soil health adoption, in addition to some dollars that were put available for the MDA Soil Health Equipment Assistance Program. So I want to understand and talk with the authors a little bit about how some of those resources could be used to help in this pilot program to really have some positive results that we're seeing from some of the other existing programs that are in place. The last thing I'll just mention is around some flexibility for some of the practices so that a farmer can determine which practice or suite of practices is going to work best for their farm based upon soil type and crop conditions. So this proposal is looking at sort of matching up three practices, and really do appreciate the inclusion of precision nutrient management because there has been a lot of positive research looking at how that can really help to reduce climate impacts from fertilizer loss, especially with nitrous oxide emissions. And the last thing I'll just mention is if some of those payment rates that are outlined in the pilot would be enough to sort of provide that incentive for farmer adoption of some of these new practices. And would also ask the committee to look at ways that we could bolster some of the existing programs, in particular the MDA Soil Health Assistance Program that was made permanent last year with some ongoing funding. So I will end my comments there, but we're happy to continue to work with the authors as this process or as this bill moves through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. So seeing there are no amendments to the bill, we'll move to committee discussion. First member up is Representative Jacob.
Well, thank you, Chair Vang. So as I read through the bill, first of all, on 2.1, if the Board of Water and Soil Resources or Soil Water Conservation District determines that there's a substantive threat or human health and safety of human health and safety to the environment to aid in the law enforcement process. So I guess to the author, like I said, you've heard me talk many times about how many different water resource boards that I've sat on, and farmers come into these offices largely because they're not an enforcement arm of the law. So how would Bowser, it sounds like you're making Bowser an enforcing agency, or is SWCD the enforcing arm, or how is this enforced?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jacob, for the question. I guess I am not totally clear on how that might work in practice, but as has been mentioned many times, happy to work with you on language and try to figure out what makes the most sense. And if this is a liability question, to make sure we're sort of covering our butts on that at the same time.
Representative Jacob.
Yeah, I guess I don't understand the liability of it, but what I'm saying is that if a farmer sees that there's an enforcement arm or component at the SWCD district, they're likely going to not come in for a lot of other programs and reasons because of this becoming part of the program now. So I'd have concern with that. And largely, a lot of this seems to kind of recreate the wheel, but with the idea of the multiple different pieces that you're putting together, cover cropping, and I like all these practices. This is great to see you bringing this forward. But it doesn't look like it offers much flexibility to the farmer. It says you have to do A, B, and C. And if there's one thing that I've learned over the years is that every farm is unique and requires its own set of practices. In some years, this looks like this might work out just great on my farm. And on other years, the weather just isn't going to permit it. So can a person jump in and out of this from year to year? Or if you fail one year due to weather and you can't get in to get that cover crop in, what's the ramifications for that?
Representative Olson?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Representative Jacob. We really appreciate that. That was one of the conversations we'd had is, you know, my family's been no-till drilling since the 1990s, the early 90s, back around the time I was born. So there was no aid when we were attempting to buy a new one. So we went from 20 feet in width to 40 feet in width on our own dime. And so the conversation that we've been having is how do we make this a long-term investment? How can we help farmers knowing that they're going to have the ability to be in it to make their own decisions, to have their incentives? It's a good question, and we really appreciate the poking holes in the conversation, because that's why we're here, to talk about how we can become better at what we're already doing a really good job at doing. And so I appreciate the question, and I do agree with you. There has been some issues as I was re-looking at it. There's some commas that say and, where I think it should say comma or. There's some of those kind of things as well, so thank you for bringing that up.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, so we, in some of the conversations we've had, Olmsted Soil and Water Conservation District has kind of a wider menu of options for these different practices beyond like what NRCS allows. And so on page three, starting at line 3.27, so these additional practices, so also in including in this is perennial cropping, interseeding, organic production, row crimping, managed rotational grazing, et cetera. And so I think we want to make this as broad as possible because of those very things that you just mentioned. And also we want to make this a longevity program. So a lot of the soil and water conservation districts, you can maybe enroll in a cover crop program for 3 years, and after that, you no longer qualify for that support. So trying to be able to support people as they scale up, because we actually want to keep the people in who have that experience, and maybe they want to do more. Maybe they're ready to then add, you know, row crimping and rotational grazing on top of what they're already doing. So I guess our hope for the program is that it's based on the results. And so trying to build in enough ways that pathways for people to find success and to get support in the program for the long term, so that if you have one season that is a drought after 3 years of drought in our part of the state, that's not going to necessarily throw you all the way out of the program.
Final follow-up, Representative Jacob?
Sure. So you got right into my last question anyhow. So alfalfa, many of us bring that into the rotation. And generally, when you plant alfalfa, it's a 3 to 4 year just what we're normally doing. So can you enroll those acres that you were going to put in alfalfa into the rotation regularly for just the 3 years and receive the payment?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Jacob, to your question, this is a question that we've had with some of the advocates and some of the folks that were up here. And I just want to point out at the very top of the fourth page. So 4.2 talks about the cover crop mix and talking about annual perennial grasses, non-legume broadleaves, and legumes. We would love to make that language broader, because that even might leave out something like winter rye or something like that. So
happy to take that feedback. We want to make this more flexible, and I think that discussion around alfalfa is a really important one to have, and open to making sure that that is included, making sure that that also then results in the results that we want. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And as I'm looking through this on 3.11 and 3.33, the, you know, the goals by 2040, you know, 100% of the state's tillable acres are enrolled in a public or private program that requires cover cropping, no-till and strip-till, or strip-till and precision nutrient management. You know, and I'm looking at, you know, the, you know, I no-till on my farm, or mostly no-till, actually, the, and with cattle, and I graze some crops in the fall after they get harvested. I actually had to fix some ruts because they were, you know, around Christmas time. We had to go about 2 to 3 inches of rain and around Christmas. And so we had some pretty significant ruts damaging our fields from the cattle. And so I had actually had worked that up this last weekend. The weather was perfect for it. And I don't like to do it, but it was a necessity to fix this. So, I look at things like that, and is that gonna eliminate the possibility of some of these things? Because there is, I do agree with no-till and strip-till, but there is a time for broadacre tillage. But then also, you know, the crops that I grow aren't root crops. I'm thinking of potatoes, of sugar beets, of some of these other things that a strip-till probably isn't going to be a fit well for these. And, you know, it's not just, you know, I mean, we grow a very diverse amount of crops in Minnesota, and I get a little bit concerned when we have goals, though, 100%, that, you know, weather dictates, even the best intentions that we have. And I, Representative Olson, on how you had talked about how you got started with no-till. It was somewhat by accident and somewhat of a necessity, but I agree that there's a lot of ands that probably should be ors and things like that. I think there's some work that needs to be done in this bill, and I think it's noble work. I think there's some similar things that are already going on with through the NRCS, the CSP program. Many of these things that I think are already covered, but I do think that we can continue to explore. I think agriculture has a really good story to tell. Today is National Ag Day. There's a lot of Farm Bureau people here today. They've probably knocked on your door. We've got a good story to tell, and many of them are often home doing the work and not coming to the Capitol and telling of the great things they do. But overall, they're doing a lot of very good things that we're not taking credit for. And, this bill does kind of give a thank you for that, but I do think it does need a lot of work yet.
Representative Olson?
Yes, thank you, Representative Nelson. We all agree, absolutely, including what the Farm Bureau was saying, what the corn growers are saying. The goals, they're unrealistic the way it's written. 100% of anything is probably the only guarantee is that it's not going to happen at 100%. That's the only 100% you can guarantee. So we appreciate that, those conversations that we've had. Like I said, it was introduced yesterday because we wanted this opportunity to talk about how great farming is, how great ag is, and how well we take care of the land. And it's an opportunity to thank and to incentivize in some instances farmers who maybe aren't there yet. You know, like my father had been doing it for 45 years one way. He doesn't really want to change until someone helps him out with it. And so that's the entire concept of this idea, is how do we help our farmers to be better at what they're already really great at. So we appreciate the conversation, appreciate the chance to have this heard. We understand absolutely that there is a lot that needs to get done on this. But anytime someone's going to put a mic in my face and let me talk about how great our farmers are, I'm going to do it. So thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I'm Representative Purcell Olson and Kraft. My question centers around Section 3. These you want to be 100% by 2040, and I think it's been said before that's probably going to need to be changed. But I'm curious, as to why you did not include minimal till. Many farmers use minimal till because of the ground that we have, and I'm curious as to why this was left out.
Representative Olson?
I would say we just missed it on the list. Thank you. Thanks for bringing it up, because we do that as well. We missed it on the list.
Representative Harder?
Thank you, Chair Vang. Well, I would suggest that you perhaps add that in, because that is another farming practice that people use because it works for the lay of the land. So like our ground, we use minimal till for just a number of reasons. Cover cropping. Well, actually, on our farm, we don't do cover crops, and that's for a number of reasons. That could be the soil type, the time that it takes to put it in, the weather. It just doesn't always work for us. And not only that, because we also have to work off the farm as well, because there are requirements that we have to make, such as insurance. But the other thing that I just want to make a comment is that there seems to be a lot of monitoring of people and measuring things, what I would call government oversight, which is probably too much, because I just don't particularly care for government telling agriculture, you know, what type of tilling you have to do. Do you have to do the crop cover or this or that? Because it doesn't take into consideration each individual farmer and their practices or the type of ground, because the type of ground that I have certainly is different than Representative Olson. And so therefore you do the items or the things that are for that particular piece of property. So I'm just not a favor, as I was already said, of government mandates, because one size really doesn't fit all. Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few points. Really appreciate the comments. I will say there's not the program, there's no mandate to be part of the program. That's clear that this is set up like that. And there is a line to figure out here, and based on the science of what set of practices have results. And so that's, I think we're very open to what those can be, but also we need to be a little bit guided by the science of, if we're gonna pay for this, what are the results that we're gonna get? So that's the line to walk. But your input's very good. Thank you.
Representative Harder, follow up.
Thank you, Chair Vane. Just one more thing with this cover cropping. So there are a lot of programs out there now, soil and water, that they try to get landowners interested in doing the cover crops. And there seem to be issues with that. They might do it one year. They decide not to do it. It would be interesting if the state has all sorts of data and information. It would be interesting if the state had any kind of data on this program, you know, how many people actually use the program and then do it long term. That would be interesting data to find out. Thank you.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Actually, my questions are kind of asked by Representative Jacob and covered with Representative Nelson's questions. So I'll just, I was concerned about the law enforcement clause there in page two. Page three, just a quick comment about, I mean, Representative Olson and I have talked about this a number of times. We couldn't live farther apart from each other in this state. I don't think people understand how big Minnesota really is. When I look at the and on page three, on 3.12, in particular, 100% of state's tillable acres, and think about Roosevelt County or Kitson County, and how cover cropping just is not feasible with the climate we have up there. I'm concerned about that. And I realize it's not mandatory, but it's just frustrating. I think I'll close it out, and maybe Representative Olson could comment. Representative Kraft, when you talked in your bill introduction, you talked about agriculture can be part of the solution. And I think there's kind of, therein lies the problem with the perception of farmers in general right now. We're looking like it's not happening now. Farmers have been part of the solution and are part of the solution. And I think Representative Olson's comments, and maybe you could go deeper into it, Representative Olson, you mentioned how long you've been doing, you know, no-till and whatnot. just farmers getting the credit for what they're doing. Could you comment more on? I get there's the difference in the way Dad did it and the way you're doing it now, right? But the fact is, we have been doing this for a long time. And could you just comment more on that change in culture on your farm?
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Representative Burkle. That's a really good one. So remember, and I think to Representative Harder's original statement about the goals, I think that you're absolutely right in the fact that when it's an incentive-based program that you have goals to make 100%, that makes a really conflicting question. That's a big concern, right? So we're going to have to take a look at that absolutely as we move forward. But this, the concept that a lot of us farmers, we don't like change, and we're thrown into change whether we're incentivized into the change or the environment puts us into that position. That's what happened to me. The environment told me you're going to have to change the way you're doing it today because you got froze out and you can't play the game the way you were. It worked out really well for me because I made as much money and I saved money not having to do it. I understand fully that that's not the case for every part of this state. I understand that the way you grow things up in the far northland is way different from where I grow in the south. You know, we've hardly had any, we don't have ice down in southern Minnesota. It doesn't ever get above 60, we're below 60 degrees where I come from. So that's where this conversation is, and I'm so glad that we're having it, and I really appreciate all the concerns that have been brought up, the holes that have been thrown into this conversation, because that's truly what I believe we should be here for. The concept, I don't think a single person here who actually truly advocates for ag says, differently that, we shouldn't be trying to be as good as we possibly can. And that's what a lot of us understand. And the way I can be as best as I possibly can be is a lot different than the soils that Representative Jacob has, and his practices have to be different. And so that's why we have to have this conversation. And I appreciate the ability to sit here, I guess I'm not standing, but to sit in front of a microphone and say, farming is the solution. Agriculture is the solution. We do great things. We do absolutely great things. And it's sometimes difficult to move into the next thing. My dad would not want to change the way he's been doing things for 45 years. But when someone comes to him and says, hey, this is a really good idea, it could save you money, and here's a little bit of help and knowledge in doing it, I don't know how to do cover crop. I don't do cover crop. I don't know anything about it. A program like this could help me do it because the soils that I have down where I come from, it could help. It could do some good. And so that's the entire goal. I appreciate the ability to talk in front of you today and that you hear this bill. I think it most certainly has work that needs to be done, as we've discussed here today. But the concept remains the same. Farmers do a great job. Let's encourage them to do an even better job.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And that's, I just want to reiterate that. I think, I challenge anybody to find an industry such as agriculture's impact on the climate. You just look at production practices now, and I'll take livestock, or you could take the milk industry, and production versus inputs, and I would challenge any industry to show as great advance as far as climate goes as the ag industry has these last few years.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I will be quick so we can move along here. Yeah, I think we all agree that these practices are good. A lot of programs are going to entail these types of things that farmers are incentivized to do. I just have a question for you, Madam Chair. This bill, again, came in a hurry, got a bill number last evening. And I think as of this morning, this was going to be held over in this committee. Now you're telling us it's going to be moving on. What's the future for this bill?
Yeah, so the motion of this bill will go to environment, and then I believe Chair Hansen will probably schedule for hearing. He could probably answer after this too, and it will come back to our committee, and it'd be part of the discussion of what we can look at in terms of the discussion we've been having and how we can resolve, find a resolution and doing something about the nitrates in southeast Minnesota. Yeah, Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. The testifiers have said on several occasions that this bill needs a lot of work, a lot of minor things that need to be corrected in the bill, and I agree with that. My only concern, one of my concerns, but on page 4, line 5 and 6, it talks about an eligible farmer. Again, we have definitions. And I looked up section 500.24. And it's a fairly long section. It's 9 pages long. It deals with a family farm. but on a couple of occasions, or actually more than once, it talks about farms not being any larger than 1,500 acres. So is this another attempt to prioritize segments or groups of farmers, or is this going to be open to all farmers, whether they farm 10 acres or 10,000 acres?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I had not followed through to look at that part of statute. The intention of this is that, especially if we're going to try to reach lofty goals like most of the acres covered, that we don't exclude anyone from a program like this.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we have your word on that then, correct?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Lead Anderson. Absolutely.
All right, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe to just enumerate on where it goes. So looking at the bill, it has a lot of tasks for Bowser, so we're going to need a fiscal note on the Bowser costs, and that in my jurisdiction. It also has data practices and penalties, which may result in a trip to judiciary as well.
Further discussion? All right. Well, closing remarks, Representative Olson.
Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to talk about how great farmers are and how well we can continue to be.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The idea of a program using the fertilizer fee farmers already pay in order to feed into a program that in turn pays farmers has us pretty excited. It's not perfect, and in conversations over the last year plus and just this week, and just in fact today, there are a lot of ways we can improve this program to better reach the scale we need and fit the needs of the growers from across Minnesota for their own specific needs and constraints on their farms. Our idea is to pay for the performance and encourage permanence, and thank you for the wonderful discussion around this bill today.
All right, seeing no further discussion, the motion to refer House File 4989 to the Environment Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion passes. House File 4989 is be referred to the Environment Committee. Members, our next bill is House File 4163. That is Representative Norris. I will move that House File 4163 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Norris. I see that you have the DE, and I believe this is in the shape that you would like to be in. So all those in favor of the motions, and I will move the DE1 amendment. So all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes have it, and the DE1 is adopted. So to the bill as amended, Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members. It's great to be with you here in the Ag Committee. I've got a bill before you that hopefully is a little bit easier and lighter than the last one. This bill builds on the Farms to Schools program. This program helps to get fresh food and produce from farmers directly to schools. Last year, the bill was expanded to include early childhood centers as well. But there was a challenge with some of the language that was in the bill that prevented it from being used for especially home-based providers of child care. And so what this bill is doing is simply updating some of the language to allow for really all child care providers, whether they are center-based, home-based, school-based, to be able to qualify for this program. It doesn't appropriate any new funding. It just really clarifies the intent of the legislation that was passed last year. And with that, Chair Vang, I've got a testifier to explain a little bit more about the program.
All right, Aaron McKee, if you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. My name is Aaron McKee, and I am the Community Food Systems Program Director with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. And I support farm to school and farm to early care around the state. I've done evaluation and supporting program implementation. And I'm super excited to be supporting Representative Norris's bill, HF 4163, to add home-based early care providers to the MDA Farm to School and Early Care grant. And as Representative Norris explained, previously this grant only was available to K-12 schools. And last year, I thank you so much for opening up that opportunity to include our littlest eaters by including center-based care. And so this would be a policy change that would allow home-based early care providers to also access that support. And I'll just say the main reason we're really excited about this is that it's especially important for greater Minnesota, where home-based care is the backbone of child care in those communities that have lower population density, and families really depend on home-based care for their early care needs. And we really want all of our littlest kiddos to have access to fresh local food. We know that kids get 70% of their nutrition intake for their daily nutrition intake in their early care settings, and it's a great window of opportunity to influence their taste preferences and ideas about where food comes from as well. And I'll say too, at IATP, we conducted a pilot program offering a grant, and we had a lot of interest from home-based providers. We had applications in 2022 from 369 home-based providers from around the state. We also, in our evaluation work in the summer of 2023, we did a statewide survey on farm to early care, and 83% of our respondents were home-based providers, and 73% of our respondents said that the main support that they would look for is grant-based support. So this would really help those providers and open up an additional market for our farmers as well. And I wish we could have a provider testify and share their perspective. It's very difficult for home-based providers to testify, but you can check the letters of support to get a little bit more of their perspective. There's also a handout with more background on the grant as well. So I'm very excited. I hope you'll support this policy change, which will ensure that all Minnesota children, regardless of their care setting, can receive support to access fresh, healthy Minnesota food. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Erin. Seeing no further testimony, we'll move to discussion to the bill. Questions from members? Seeing none. Closing remarks, Representative Norris.
Chair Vang, this is an easy bill. It's a win for farmers. It's a win for our youngest learners, getting them off to a strong, healthy start, and appreciate the committee support.
All right, thank you, Representative Norris. And with that, House File 4163 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, our next bill is House File 4065, Representative Anderson. Whenever you're ready, Representative Anderson, if you can move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I would move House File 4065, I assume to be laid over, possible inclusion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, to the bill, Representative Anderson.
Again, thank you, Madam Chair. This pertains to a zoo up in my district called Hemper Zoo, and it's a well-run organization, and they already have reindeer among the animals that they house at their zoo. And in order to maintain some genetic diversity, they would like to bring in some other animals from, in this case, the state of Washington. And Minnesota has a ban on the importation of live cervidae, but there is an exemption for some zoos in the state. And we've talked about this before. There's a ZAA and there's an AZA differentiation between the zoo affiliations. And currently, the AZA has the exemption, and the ZAA does not have the exemption. And the three zoos in the state that are the AZA are the Como Park Zoo, the Minnesota Zoo, and a zoo up in Duluth. And the only zoo that is ZAA certified is the Hemper Zoo in Freeport. And we look at this more as a matter of fairness. The Hemper Zoo is very well run. There has been very little evidence of CWD, which is the obvious reason there's such a concern about importing cervidae, but very little evidence. I'm not saying there is no evidence, but little evidence of CWD in reindeer, but they are cervidae. I have a couple of testifiers, Madam Chair, that they would like to talk a bit about the bill and why they would enjoy having this exemption added to their zoo in Freeport. So if they can come down, please.
Yes, our first testifier is Jacqueline Pepin. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jacqueline Pepping from Hemker Park and Zoo, representing my mother, Joan Hemker, the founder and owner of Hemker Park and Zoo. And I am here today in support of Minnesota House File 4065, an amendment to the Farm Survey, Minnesota 35.155. Our mission at Hemker Park and Zoo is to promote animal species while advocating for environmental conservation through collaborative partnership and practical wildlife management strategies. We have cared for reindeer for over 35 years, and we hope that this exemption will allow us to continue safeguarding these animals through genetic diversity while educating our communities on the importance worldwide. Hemker Park and Zoo houses over 45 animals from 25 different AZA institutions right here in Freeport, Minnesota. For every animal we house at our facility for an AZA institution, we go through an extremely rigorous inspection with them on site, inspecting our husbandry policies and exhibits, daily care, vet care program, animal standards, with an emphasis that focuses on staff, animal, and public safety. We have met and exceeded 25 AZA institutional inspections. In addition, one of the co-owners of Hemker Park and Zoo is a member of AZA. We are also involved in numerous breeding programs to maximize genetic diversity, ensuring the preservation of animals for future generations. Hemker Park and Zoo has held the accreditation from the Zoological Association of America, ZAA, since 2013. Currently, the statute 35.155 significantly impedes the conservation of our reindeer genetic diversity. Furthermore, the current statute is unjust as it results in unequal treatment among ZAA accredited zoos based solely on their chosen accrediting organization. Established in 2005, the ZAA is dedicated to the advocacy of responsible wildlife management, conservation, and education. The association sets a high standard through its rigorous accreditation progress, rigorously evaluating various aspects such as staff, animal and guest safety, animal care, welfare, and husbandry, including biosecurity, mitigation, and prevention, and compliance with state and federal regulations, medical care, nutrition, enrichment, security, facility upkeep, record keeping, and the review of policies, procedures, and protocols. This comprehensive approach ensures exemplary animal care, welfare, and highlighting the professionalism of ZAA. In addition, ZAA's accreditation institutions serve as a bridge for people to connect with iconic animal species, including reindeer, and understand the conservation challenges these animals face in the wild. We acknowledge that there is opposition to this, and we ask for your understanding that the information you have been provided by those opposing this is outdated and biased. As a business based in Minnesota, ZAA accredited and women-owned, we are here seeking equality, similar to what an AZA entity would receive. We're not implying that one organization stands superior over the other. Instead, we're advocating for uniform fairness, as there are numerous zoological facilities that hold dual accreditation with both ZAA and AZA. Both ZAA and AZA hold themselves to high standards that go above and beyond state and federal guidelines. Our objective is to ensure that these high standards are recognized and treated equally across the board. When comparing the ZAA and AZA, notable similarities in their standards emerge. This correlation supports a proposal to include ZAA in Subdivision 12 of 35.155 to address an unjust bias in the legislation. I thank you all for taking the time, the authors, and I am available for questions.
Thank you, Jacqueline. We have two more testifiers. So next one is Kelly Straka from DNR. You can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Kelly Straka, and I am the Wildlife Section Manager for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The Wildlife Section is responsible for the research and management of game populations, the restoration and enhancement of wildlife habitat, and the oversight of more than 1,400 wildlife management areas across the state, critical for the health of Minnesota's wildlife, as well as the benefits that wildlife-based recreation provides for all Minnesotans. As part of our commitment to protecting the health of Minnesota's wildlife, and in particular, our wild deer populations, we have been aggressively fighting chronic wasting disease, or CWD, since 2002. This includes not only actively looking for the disease, but also managing persisting infections and preventing new introductions of CWD. Our comprehensive strategy for keeping Minnesota's deer, elk, and moose healthy includes carcass movement restrictions for in-state movement, as well as the importation of cervid carcasses harvested outside of our borders. It is illegal to import whole deer, elk, moose, caribou, and reindeer carcasses into Minnesota. This prohibition applies to all U.S. states, Canadian provinces, or other areas, regardless of CWD status. In 2023, the Minnesota legislature granted sole authority of farmed whitetail deer to the Minnesota DNR. We work closely with our partners at the Board of Animal Health to develop and implement a farmed whitetail deer program, and we continue this cooperation with the board, as well as close coordination with conservation officers to ensure a program that balances the needs of farmed deer producers and protects the health of deer on both sides of the fence. We do consider the importation of live cervids and cervid carcasses to be a risk factor for new introductions of CWD, and we do not support a relaxation of Minnesota's current standards. It is our understanding that the Zoological Association of America, CAA, has a different accreditation process and standards than the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, AZA, and without additional information on the technical differences between these programs, we are concerned that this change may invite additional risk to the health of Minnesota's wild and farm cervids. In light of these concerns, we look forward to working with the bill authors to better understand the intent of the change and explore ways we can support our captive facilities while protecting the health of our farmed and wild deer populations. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly. Our final testifier is Jill Fritz. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jill Fritz. I'm a senior director of wildlife protection at the Humane Society of the United States. We're speaking in opposition to House File 4065. As the DNR representative said, Minnesota restricts the importation of cervids like white-tailed deer and elk to protect the state's population from chronic wasting disease. This disease is fatal to animals, and there are no treatments or vaccines, and it may also be a risk to people. So current Minnesota law, as was said already, has an exemption for the interstate transfer of cervids between two facilities accredited by the respected Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or AZA, which ensures knowledgeable and experienced professionals and care for animals in safe, modern facilities. But House File 4065 would add an exemption for another entity with a similar name, the Zoological Association of America, or the ZAA. It accredits roadside zoos and private menageries with records of dangerous incidents, violations of the Federal Animal Welfare Act, and financial instability. Despite claims to the contrary, ZAA standards and its implementation of those standards are far weaker than those of the AZA. We don't believe that Minnesota should jeopardize the health of its wildlife and people by allowing importation of cervids from potentially substandard facilities. So we ask for your no vote on this bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jill. I don't see any further testifiers, so we'll move to discussion to the bill. Questions from members? Representative Jacob.
I think for the last testifier here, the statement was made that AZA failed the accreditation and received accreditation from ZAA. So I'm wondering about specifics on those accreditations.
Director Fritz?
Where and how many?
I have a very long list that I'm happy to share with the committee. Just off the top of my head, there are a couple of zoos, one in Illinois called the Niobe Zoo in Illinois, and then another in the Pittsburgh Zoo in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Failed AZA accreditation and instead achieved ZAA accreditation.
Representative,
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
You can finish your comment.
Yes, I just wanted to list some of the violations. They were for financial instability, failing infrastructure, misuse of zoo resources for personal profit by zoo executives, Animal Welfare Act violations, insufficient staffing, and inadequate animal care, including citations for serious violations that directly impacted the health and welfare of the animals.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you. Were there fines associated with those?
Director Fritz.
Madam Chair, yes. Thank you, Representative. There have been just in between 2010 and 2023, more than $191,000 in fines have been levied against ZAA accredited facilities for violations of the Animal Welfare Act.
Representative Jacob.
I'd like to see that list too, if the committee could have.
Happy to share that. Yes.
Have the list.
Yeah, Director Fritz, if you can email that to our staff, Amanda here, and she can pass it out to our committee members. Representative Jacob?
Last question.
Yes.
So can you give any examples of the ZAA standards being, quote, far weaker than those of the A2A or AZA?
Director Fritz?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative. The ZAA has basically copied and duplicated the AZA's standards into its own and adopted them as their own, but the difference is that they don't have a good record of implementing those standards. If that were the case, they would not be certifying so many zoos that have failed those AZA standards, and there wouldn't be a need for two different accrediting organizations. But again, I will be happy to send you more details on those.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Closing remarks, Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. I find some of those a little bit concerning, some of the comments. And I did some quick research, and this last testifier mentioned the zoo in Pittsburgh. And unless there are two different zoos in Pittsburgh, they were an AZA zoo, and they were because of whatever happened, they were taken off of AZA, but now they've been put back on again. So there are instances of situations at both types of zoo. We're dealing with animals here, and things can happen. I understand the concern with CWD. It is a serious situation. But again, I think this comes down to a fairness issue, and there is an amendment that I didn't get in time that I would like to offer at the next committee stop. And with that, Madam Chair, I would ask members to keep an open mind on this and be looking at the possibility of allowing this one zoo in Minnesota to keep their diversity sustaining and strong by being able to import several reindeer from the state of Washington. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, House, with that, House File, Representative Anderson moves that House File 4065 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, our final business item is House File 4044, which is Representative Jacob's bill. This is a bill, it will be a motion, so we've already heard this bill already. I don't believe we need further discussion unless members do feel strongly to say a couple of last remarks before we do the motion. Vice Chair Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that the version that we have is as amended, that the committee approved the last time around. The amendment is the A1.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that, Representative Purcell. Yes, it will be. The motion will be to move House File 4044 as amended to the Taxes Committee. So seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it and the motion prevails. House File 4044 as amended is to be referred to the Taxes Committee. And with that, thank you members for a robust discussion today. Our next meeting is Thursday. Oh, we forgot one more. Minutes. We're doing our minutes. Vice Chair Purcell, can I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the approval of the minutes from March 14th, 2024.
All right, Representative Purcell moves the motion to approve the minutes of March 14th. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed say no. The minutes, the motion prevails, and the minutes for March 14th, 2024 are approved. And with that, our next meeting is on Thursday, March 21st. This meeting is adjourned.